This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. It takes a lot of energy to run this information technology that we're all dependent on. Right now, I need electricity to modulate the frequency to create FM radio. Now think about how much juice is needed to run a giant cloud storage facility like the one that Microsoft has here in San Antonio. Now factor in the rising concerns about carbon emissions, and then there's growth of interest in clean, renewable energy. And here in San Antonio, some of the nation's leaders in renewables are gathering to discuss deals, tech, government regulation, and the future of the planet. The Texas Renewable 2013 Conference will be happening on the 11th and 12th of the month. But right now, we're going to get a little preview. Our guest of this half hour, we have Brian Janis. He is the Director of Energy Strategy for Microsoft. And later on, we'll be talking with Dan Riker. He's the Executive Director of the Steyer Taylor Center for Energy Policy and Finance. So, Brian, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. I appreciate you having me.
So, y'all recently inked a deal of exclusive wind production energy that will be coming to a Microsoft information storage facility here in San Antonio. Can you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is our first large-scale power purchase agreement directly with a renewable energy project. In this case, it's a wind project. It's 110 megawatts, which at peak would power probably somewhere between 50 and 55,000 homes. Obviously, on a hot day in Texas, it would be towards the lower end of that. But so we're excited to be entering into this particular market. And to be clear, the power that we're purchasing from this project is not directly providing electricity to our data center there in San Antonio. We still maintain our relationship with CPS, just as you would for your home or any other business in the city. This transaction is actually happening at the wholesale level, so we're purchasing power that is going directly into the ERCOT grid to feed the broader grid, but we are responsible for ensuring that this project gets built and have claim to the both the power and the renewable energy credits or the environmental attributes that are generated.
So you don't have an extension cord that runs all the way up to north of Fort Worth where this energy farm is. You're going to plug into CPS Energy. Is it the idea that, the power that's created from this giant wind farm will go into the overall pool of energy that we have that people use in Texas, and then it'll be available for you to use in Texas, in San Antonio, that way?
That's right. There's not an extension cord, and the reason there's not, of course, is that we actually have a very robust electricity grid in the state of Texas, particularly because there's been a significant amount of investment in the renewable or in the transmission lines heading out to the western part of the state. That's made wind a much more attractive investment in the state of Texas. And so the way that we are looking at it is we are pulling power off of the grid. In this case, we're pulling it through CPS, but ultimately it is tied into a broader grid that includes CPS investment and South Texas Nuclear Project, as well as their coal and natural gas. But then CPS, of course, is connected to the broader grid in ERCOT as well. And so the power that we're going to be putting onto the grid, of course, is going to go in in the market. But what it does for us is really provide two things. One, it provides us some long-term price certainty. And the way that works is, ultimately, our rate that we pay in Texas through CPS is to some degree tied to the cost of the underlying fuel sources, tied to the cost of natural gas primarily in the state of Texas. And so if natural gas goes up from current relatively low price today of, say, $3 to $4 back to what it was in 2008, where maybe it's closer to $10, we're going to experience an impact on our rate, as will you and every other consumer in the state of Texas, in the form of higher electricity rates. So this power purchase agreement effectively provides an offset for us. It helps us to control, to some degree, some of those long-term price risks associated with rising energy prices. And because it's a fixed asset that has no variable cost to operate effectively in terms of fuel, we have a certain price for that power over a 20-year period. And so it provides us some price protection there.
So, but you're choosing wind energy. That's Why wind energy?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, the economics of wind have improved considerably over the last several years. We have been looking at projects like this for some time, and as we've watched the prices tick down due to better turbine design, due to better balance of plant, being able to install the projects at a lower cost. Now, we've seen those prices become more and more attractive. Combine that with the investments that Texas has made in additional transmission lines going out into the western part of the state, it's really made Texas, and particularly Texas wind, an ideal investment at this point.
How important is it as a brand for Microsoft to be able to present itself as a running on a green cloud, being energy smart and also not harming the planet?
Well, it's very important, and it's important because one of the key benefits of the cloud is, in fact, efficiency. The fact that if you take a server or a handful of servers is maybe sitting in a closet somewhere at some commercial business, and you take that same compute and you put it into a data center like what Microsoft operates there in San Antonio that is highly optimized to run servers inside of that building. The cooling systems have been designed that way, the design of the building, the shape of the building, the way that we...
So it's not just a regular old office building. This thing is like state-of-the-art. It's designed to conserve energy and make the best use of every watt you put in it.
That's right. That's right. And that's why the amount of compute or the amount of storage that we can execute inside of one of our data centers takes roughly half the energy of what it would for a standard business that was trying to do the same thing. Because we can operate it much more efficiently, we can virtualize the data, we can do things that your standard business just isn't going to do, and that's part of why the cloud is so compelling, because you can effectively do more with less. And that's really the challenge that we have across our entire infrastructure. It's how do we continue to do more with less? How do we continue to meet the demands of the information age, the just rapid growth that we're seeing in the demands for data as we put more and more in devices in more people's hands, and the need to constantly have access to information. I'm actually at Disneyland right now, and one of the things that's been amazing as we're walking around the park with my kids is being able to pull out my smartphone and see a map of the park. And not only see a map of the park, I can look at any ride and see how many minutes the wait is at each ride at that moment in time. And looking at all the other people that are walking around the park that also have devices in their hand, the amount of data that we're demanding, and just thinking a few years ago, no one would have ever thought that was an option. So we're really seeing an amazing transition in terms of the amount of data that we're creating, the amount of data we're demanding, and so our ability to be able to continue to innovate and drive down the cost and drive down the resource utilization to produce that data and to support that is critical for our business.
Right, and it depends on energy. So we're going to continue the conversation about renewable energy and the future and how Microsoft is maximizing your efforts. This is The Source on KSTX. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the future of green energy. And with me on the line is Brian Janis. He is Director of Energy Strategy for Microsoft. They recently inked a deal for an exclusive wind farm energy to come to San Antonio for their Microsoft data center that they have here. We invite you to join the conversation. If you've got a question about green energy, call in 614-8980, 614-8980. 8980. So, Brian, I asked you, but I don't know if I got the answer I was looking for about consumer choice and the importance of, because, you know, Microsoft is in competition with consumers in the online world. And is it important for consumers? They want to feel good about their choices and knowing that you are not a company that's, not doing your best to conserve your power, right?
That's right. It is important. And in fact, as a corporation, beyond just our data centers, we've made a commitment to carbon neutrality, which means that every amount of carbon that our business emits, whether that's from consuming electricity in a data center to air travel, all of that is offset with either the purchase of renewable energy, credits, or carbon offsets, because we see it is important for us to send a message and let the market know that this is an important issue to us. Obviously, every business has some amount of carbon footprint. Right, we're always going to be, in some ways, utilizing energy to run our businesses. But we're really focused on not only driving efficiencies in the way that we operate through telecommunications, improved use of services like Skype and Link, but also into reducing the amount of energy that we consume inside of our data centers. And then whatever's left over, we're looking for things like this wind purchase to be able to further reduce that impact.
So how important is the anticipation of future government regulation? We hear eventually of these carbon taxes or offsets or that maybe they're kind of that are there, but getting will grow in importance. Is that something that y'all are considering?
It is, and in fact, last year we actually instituted an internal carbon tax. And so, we're a little ahead of the game there in that all of our businesses inside all the different business groups face an internal tax for the amount of carbon that they emit. That's their utilization inside our data centers, and that's their air travel. And so we actually have that price distributed amongst all the business groups so they can see the true dollar cost associated with their operations. And the revenue from that carbon tax actually goes to support projects like this wind project. And so we're very much prepared for that. It's difficult to predict exactly what's going to happen at the national level, but we're very much prepared if something like that eventually comes down the pipe, because we've already adapted our business to see these carbon price signals.
And it seems like you've thrown in with wind wholeheartedly, but what about why not solar so much?
Actually, we're very interested in solar. The prices for solar panels over the last several years have continued to drop precipitously. And so we're very interested in the possibility of replicating what we've done here with this wind project into a large solar project as well. And so it's very much on our radar. But the best opportunity that we were able to find in the near term was this particular wind project. But it certainly is not to the exclusion of looking at solar, biomass, and other opportunities.
So a lot of what you're doing really is self-driven, looking at the marketplace, anticipating where things are headed. But I know that there was a report in September 2012 in the New York Times saying that Microsoft wasted millions of watts of energy to avoid a fine. And can you tell me about that?
Yeah, that story was a bit overblown, and it's not exactly how everything went down. We did have a situation where we had a somewhat perverse incentive to utilize more electricity than we needed, to meet a certain rate target. And so we had a discussion with the utility, and their suggestion was if you don't want to, realize this penalty, you should use more electricity. And we looked at that situation and reasoned with utility and said, we shouldn't have a situation where you're trying to encourage us to use more electricity. Let's come up with an alternative that doesn't involve needlessly, running processes and such. And so we were able to come up with a more reasonable solution with the utility. But I think that goes to highlight some of the challenges that we all face as consumers. When you have rate structures that don't necessarily provide incentives to always do the right thing as a consumer. We have oftentimes very flat rate structures that just provide you one price all day long, when in fact electricity costs much more to produce in the afternoon when you've utilized all of the low-cost generation than it does early in the morning. And so we should have more intelligent rate structures that actually provide the proper price signals down to the end user. And I think we're moving in that direction, but it just takes some time with changes in regulations and tariffs and everything that goes along with that.
Yeah, that was a very bizarre situation, a strange story about how this one entity saying you're not using enough power, Microsoft. We're gonna slap you with a fine if you don't. But so you're already anticipating carbon taxes. But when do you think carbon taxes could be for real?
No, I've prognosticated on that multiple times throughout my career, and I've always been wrong. So I'm hesitant to say when I think that's going to happen. I do think that we have some movement towards potentially having a national renewable energy standard. I would see that probably before we would see a national, say, carbon tax or cap and trade system. We certainly are seeing more activity at the regional level. We've already seen that in California, I think that's likely to expand to other states. So my guess would be at this point that we'd see more what we've seen in the renewable energy standard space, where states have come out and set targets for renewables, and we have dozens of states now that have targets set. And so I think we'll probably see something more like that, where a carbon market will be developed that will be similar to what we have in California and what we also have in parts of the Northeast, and will probably be driven for the state level, at least for the near term.
Our phone lines are open, and you can call in at 614-8980, 614-8980. Alice is on the line. Alice, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I want to say thanks for having such a well-informed guest on your show. It's refreshing. And I really applaud his company modeling so well things that are coming down the pike. I have a question about other energy sources. I really applaud his interest in wind and solar. But what about geothermal? Here in Texas, we've got so many opportunities for that, and people are really not pursuing that yet.
Okay, Alice, thanks for that phone call. And Brian Janis from Microsoft, you've got an answer.
Yeah, actually, geothermal is also something we've looked at. It is a bit challenging. The economics of developing geothermal can be difficult just because the technology, at least in the past, has not been incredibly efficient in terms of identifying the right resources. It took a lot of drilling and sort of hit and miss to really find an ideal resource. I think we're seeing improvements in that. Some of those improvements are tied to a lot of the work that has gone on in the oil and gas industry to improve visibility into deep embedded rock formations. And so I see some promising things on the horizon for geothermal, and I'm optimistic that we'll see some projects similar to like what we're doing here with this wind project. We'll see more of that in geothermal in the coming years.
You know, when people talk about geothermal, immediately what pops into mind is something like Iceland or Terra del Fuego, where you've got all this steam coming out of the ground. But it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, you can use the earth as a heat sink to cool things when you're running too hot, or to warm things when it's too cold.
That's exactly right. It doesn't always have to be these massive production, like electricity production facilities. So we do have good resources for that in parts of the West. I think that is a promising development, and we'll see more activity in the coming years.
So what do you see as the biggest challenge for where you want to take? Because you're the strategy guy for Microsoft and your energy. What are you worried about?
The biggest challenge is that we continue to see just massive increases in the amount of demand that is coming at us. And so we're having to look to putting greater and greater demands on the electricity grid, on the local grid, on companies like CPS to provide us power to supply and to meet all of this demand. And so we've really been focused not only on looking at things like these large wind projects that we can connect to the grid, but what's happening inside of our facility, and what are ways that we can find new technologies that can significantly reduce the amount of electricity that we need in the first place. And so we have some research projects going on and actually working on a new partnership that isn't quite finalized yet, but we're really optimistic that we're going to have something coming out in the next several weeks. It's really going to be focused on looking at the next generation of distributed generation technology like fuel cells and microturbines, and how can we bring those into the data center and significantly reduce the amount of energy that we need in the first place to run those servers. And so it is going to be, you know, this upcoming conference is talking about all of the above sort of energy strategy, and that's very much the way that we're looking at it.
Yeah, fuel cells, we heard so much about them a while ago, and then they fell off the map. I was wondering what had happened there.
Well, the challenge with fuel cells continues to be cost. The technology is really fantastic in that what you're doing is you're taking the electricity or taking some sort of fuel source like
hydrogen,
natural gas, biogas, and instead of combusting it, you're running it through a chemical process. It really is a fascinating technology. It works a lot like a battery, really. It looks like a battery that is constantly refueling. We are really optimistic that there are technologies and there are developments in the fuel cell space that are coming down the pipe that are really going to change the game with respect to the cost. Because the challenge at this point is most companies and most businesses and most homeowners just wouldn't be able to deploy them at a rate that's anywhere competitive to what they're getting from their local utility provider.
And real quickly, Brian, one question real quickly before we go. We're almost out of time. What about the tax subsidies for wind farms? And it seems like Club for Growth is, again, trying to take that away. How important is that for what you're doing?
Well, it is certainly part of it. We have a supportive tax policy in the United States right now for renewable energy projects. And that is really in lieu of having any sort of carbon tax or in lieu of having any sort of minimum standards for the amount of renewables that need to be put on the grid. And so that is part of the policy as it exists today.
So it's part of what is part of your calculus. Okay, Brian, I got that, but we're out of time. Thank you so much, Brian Janis from Microsoft, their Energy Solutions Global Strategy Guide. This is The Source on KSTX.